This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Welcome to a very special and unique version of Ebony and Irony podcast. What makes it so special? What makes Bunny sound so bubbly and enthusiastic today? Well, Monet is not here. Monet Exchange is not going to be here. So I have the privilege of welcoming a, you can call her a guest, you can call her a co-host who is actually well-informed, intelligent, and attractive. So it's a big, big switch for Monet. She is, I didn't say for Monet. If Monet was, then I would be the one that was busted and not well-informed and all that kind of stuff. But we would like to welcome drag and trans sensation Peppermint to the podcast.
Hey,
buddy,
you are the definition of a card. I know that's old school terminology. But I know you appreciate it.
Well, you know that I get it too, because I'm an old fool from the old school. And Peppermint, you are about to debut a show on Canada's Out TV called Call Me Mother. So before we do any, before we do that, you're in Austin, Texas. Tell us about that.
I'm in Austin, Texas, girl.
She's on vacation, honey.
I'm on vacation, and my friend Sandra Jennings and I came down to Austin just because we wanted to go somewhere where, you know, it's not the usual. And, you know, Austin is very progressive, you know, in terms of compared to the rest of Texas. It just so happens that our dear frenemy, Miss Bianca Del Rio, is on her world tour, and I got to catch the show. And you and I chatted about it before I went to the show, and you are right, honey. Woo! She is relentless.
She is. These people seem to like it when I wrote this on Instagram. I am literally in tears of rage after seeing over 1 hour of a, quote, comedian who I think gets a pass because he's a man of color, spewing venom, mocking LGBTQIA and every race in his latest comedy, quote, special, unquote. He whipped his lowbrow crowd of mouth breathers into a veritable frenzy with the most vile bits imaginable. I watch with disgust as each punchline punched down even harder than the last on our most marginalized communities. No, I don't mean Dave Chappelle's new act. I caught Bianca Del Rio's unsanitized tour at the Palladium. Filthy, rotten, wild, and highly recommended it with the delightful Sherry Vine opening up. Tell me your thoughts but obviously I'll use the Dave Chappelle controversy, which we will talk about later. I enjoyed Bianca's show. I haven't seen the last couple of them.
You know, one of the things that I think is, I haven't seen the last couple of tours either. I did see the first few, like, in national tours that she did, and like Rolodex of Hate and everything, but I haven't seen the last two. And so it was nice to see like an updated version. You know, obviously we all go way back, we know each other. And so it was, for me, it was sort of, I was looking at it through the lens of, this is, okay, this is someone I know, it's a friend and colleague, and I was comparing her work on stage today. I was comparing the jokes today and how they were delivered and her whole like mastery of it to when we were in the clubs, right? Mm-hmm. And it is,
she was better in the clubs. She was better in the clubs.
She was younger in the clubs.
Yeah. I mean, no one knew who she was and only we saw it, but she was much, much better than she is now.
No, I really do think that, you know, unlike some other comedians like Dave Chappelle, I believe, I do think that clearly she was on the edge and there were some like moments where I was like, ooh. But for the most part, it was, you know, even her jokes, I hate to dissect it. She added a little bit more self-depreciation in than I am used to hearing her do.
Well, I mean, she has it. To. Look at her. Yeah. I mean, I mean, come on. It's fucking olive oil. Olive oil, yeah. In drag.
God, no. You mean like Shelley Duvall olive oil?
Yeah, yeah. That's what Sugar Pie used to call her. Sugar Pie Coco called her olive oil.
But I do highly recommend it. I think it is an equal opportunity offender. It's certainly not the type of stuff that I would do on stage, but I was able to laugh and feel, I felt like I was safe and I felt like everyone else in the audience was safe because there felt like there was some care that was put into it and an intelligence behind it, not just attacking for the sake of attacking the color or things that people can't control, you know?
Right.
So I appreciated it.
Yeah. I mean, she is ballsy. It's like whenever she said something where the people went, ooh, she said, wait for the Jew jokes. They're on page eight. And then I don't want to give anything away because I do recommend the show highly. Boy, does she deliver them, the Jew
she
jokes.
She delivers them. There's talk of Anne Frank. There's talk of, I mean, it's everything in there, you know?
Yeah.
But I think I'm just really proud of her, you know,
I
highly recommend the show.
Yeah, I do too. That is Bianca Del Rio in Unsanitized. And tell us about your out TV
Call
show.
Call Me Mother.
Call Me Mother.
Yeah. So Call Me Mother. It's a drag reality competition show. I know, like, we're like, who needs another one of those things?
Oh, no, and, no. I wasn't thinking that at all.
You were writing it on your arm. You were literally writing it on your face, Bunny. I can see you. But the difference is with this one, its goal is to be inclusive and to, you know, because we know there's, you know, there's different types of drag entertainers and different types of drag out there. And there's been all this controversy that people have talked about over the last couple years. Should trans people be allowed on this? Should people be allowed to do this and that? Should women be allowed to do drag and just, you know, who's allowed to do what? And this show aims to kind of cut right through that and say, look, if you can do drag and do it well, let's see what you can do in this competition. And so that's what I enjoy, seeing everyone up in the club. I mean, I'm obviously certainly not a spring chicken, but I remember the times that I thought were the most fun in the clubs, or at least the parties that I really enjoyed the most in New York nightlife, were the ones that were like so mixed and had everyone there.
Hello. Hello. Exactly. I'm agreeing.
Oh, no, I thought you said you couldn't hear me. Okay, yeah. Did your hearing aid go off?
Yeah. Don't ask,
but yeah,
girl.
Those ones. And there was always trans performers doing drag and doing everything. And so this show is really inclusive. It comes on every week. It's weekly. It's based out of Canada. So, you know, a lot of some of the humor and everything is Canadian humor. But it is...
Is there such a thing? Canadian humor?
No, I don't want to say Canadian humor.
I'm kidding.
I mean, one doesn't usually use those two terms together. That's probably fair. But it is there are a lot of Canadian references, obviously, but have no fear. Anybody can watch it and get it. It's drag. Drag is universal. And it's a great show. And the premise is that there's three houses, there's three mothers, and at each week, one of the houses is in the bottom, and the mother of the bottom house has to vote out, decide which one of her children to send home. And there's a cash prize and all that jazz.
And so this begins, like the episodes are on outtv.com?
Well, you can stream it. Folks should download the OutTV app on any of their favorite devices. It's, you know, just like you would download the Netflix app or the whatever, Hulu, download that. And then you can obviously have to sign up and then you can watch it. So it's available on their website or on their app. And if you're in Canada or the UK, then you can watch it on television.
OutTV is like the equivalent of what Logo was, right?
Basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Exactly. And but I think for the rest of the world, it's all about the app, the streaming app that you just get on your Apple TV or your phone or your Roku or whatever viewing, you know, device you use.
Okay. Now they're also showing on the same Canadian network, A Girl Like Me, which is a mini documentary about you?
No, it's a short film. I released an album last year, which I forgot to send you. I'll send you a copy of it.
Okay.
And it's an R&B album. It's, you know, you and I often talk about music and being drag entertainers, doing music that might be different than what people expect, you know? And so I wanted to write about my experiences as a Black trans woman and just talk about that honestly. In the past I have, but I've always coded it to be more like drag centric or something like that. This time I was like, you know what, let me just go ahead and do it for real and talk about a relationship that I was in, that I was in love and then it ended. And so the body of work that I wrote, the songs that I wrote, the collection is basically takes you through the beginning, the middle, and end of the relationship. Okay. And so it's three albums. The first one is out now. The second two come out in the new year. And it's the series is called Letters to My Lovers. But the first album is A Girl Like Me, Letters to My Lovers. And I, instead of doing music videos, because we, you know, created a lot of this during COVID, we just decided to do one big sort of visual album. Mm-hmm. But it's really a short film, you know, with a narrative and everything. And so I produced it and it's available also on OutTV today. Today!
All right, Miss Taylor Swift getting some albums out of her relationship drama. Okay.
Failed relationships.
Well, you know what? At least you had one. I failed to have one. So now I think that's a really good idea that I might actually incorporate into my work, doing an album and a documentary about my experiences as a Black trans woman.
I think that would be, how long would that be? It'd be 1 second long. There's only a few times when you could claim to be Black, and we know when that is.
And just to let everyone know, the show is up now. Like I didn't know I had to become a member, but I looked on the OutTV site. Mm-hmm. And the first two episodes are available now to stream.
First two episodes are available now. The show comes out every single Monday, and people can stream it every Monday. And I think you'll love it. It features myself and Crystal from Drag Race UK and Barbada, who's a Canadian drag entertainer who has never obviously been on a Drag Race as the mothers. And it's great.
Okay, cool. Well, we will all check it out. And, you know, speaking about your trans journey, I think I became aware that you were trans when I got tickets to a play and you and I had been talking on the phone a good bit. And, you know, you came and, you know, you had a newly blonde hair and there was a suggestion of boobs. And I mean, it didn't faze me one bit because, like you say, the clubs we came up in were mixed. And also, you know, I was most inspired by a trans woman of color named Tasha Khan in Chattanooga when I was sneaking to the gay bars. She was not Shaka Khan, Tasha Khan. And she was billed as Chattanooga's own bubbling brown sugar or Chattanooga's own 20th century Fox. And she was everything. I mean, in terms of stage presence and, you know, we're still in touch. You know, I sent her a t-shirt when I came out with a t-shirt and she was just a phenomenal entertainer. But I another thing on the trans spectrum, you know, that, I mean, that to me, I just thought, I love Peppermint. That's something that Peppermint is doing. It doesn't, I don't have any thoughts about it. I still love, you know, Peppermint. There's no reason to. Then another thing happened recently when I had a trans friend who is a trans man, who moved to LA to work with a Hollywood star and ended up kind of getting beaten up by someone involved with this. It was a really tawdry tale. And it was so depressing that I reached out to you and you passed along the contact info of Chase Strangio from the ACLU. Because, and you know, so this is the telling part. So when I wanted to get the letter that I wrote to Chase, who is an important person at the ACLU, right? After I'd sent, because I was very distressed over my friend who actually has a slight reading, writing, maybe she's, she is only recently trans, so she is now he, you know, but for, this is a Pyramid Club person. So for 25 years, I've known this person as a great person and as a friend and smart and all this, but she was getting shit from her lawyer, from his lawyers, and I'm still doing it. And in my letter to Chase asking for if there's anything that she could refer my friend to, I realized that I had misgendered my friend who I was trying to help. And I thought Chase probably...
Did you send a letter?
Well, I realized it afterward, but I was desperate to get it right. But I'm sure that Chase probably looked at it and said, this bunny is off. But so I'm bringing that up, not to say that, you know, that Peppermint is a sweetheart who will turn you onto a connection, because Peppermint is, when she was a drag queen, now that she's trans, a sweetheart. But I bring that up to say, I was trying to do the right thing and I fucked up. I did. I loved my friend and I fucked up. I felt so stupid. But like I say, I've known this person as a feminine person. She's always a butch dyke, you know, but didn't transition until much later in life. So I did fuck that up. But I bring that up to say that there was heart behind it, but I did fuck it up. So I think sometimes people are not given a pass even when they mean well, a lot of people do not think that Dave Chappelle's special, The Closer, means well to trans people. They've immediately said it was transphobic. You probably know more about the what has gone on, but the CEO of Netflix defended it. There was two trans employees who staged a walkout to protest, and I don't exactly know where that stands right now, but you know, they were upset. They didn't want to work at a place that put out transphobic comment. But obviously I want to know your thoughts on the special, because I did watch it. I actually watched it twice. Not because stand-up is even my cup of tea, but I was like, I wanted to try to get this right and see what components were in there. Maybe some that some others weren't mentioning. And girl, I didn't even watch the Wig movie. I didn't even watch Wigstock twice. So I didn't watch my own movie twice. So
not a lot of people watched it once, bitch.
Oh! Peppermint is being drag phobic. No, just kidding. So what were your thoughts? I did watch your and Bob's segment, so I know some of it, but for people who only listen to this podcast and not Monet's secondary offerings like sibling rivalry.
Listen, I think at the end of the day, it's really important that we have open and honest conversations that really do recognize or acknowledge where everyone's coming from and what people are asking for. And as long as we have that, then I think we will all be good. And you mentioned intention when someone is misgendering them. Certainly when someone makes a mistake, and I know that the unfortunately what's going out there, the sort of misconception that's happening is this sort of, I don't want to say rumor, but this sort of false narrative that's happening that trans people are there to attack, that trans people are there to attack you. And if you get it wrong, we're going to take your job and we're looking for people to cancel. And I know that that's how people feel. Listen, I don't like being told I got to get up and change my seat for something. I don't want anybody to tell me to change anything. Change my seat on a flight or to, I don't want to be, I think we're living in it. I'm certainly at the age, and I think we're living in a world where no one wants to be inconvenienced in any way, shape or form. And I don't know if they ever have. Nobody wants to be inconvenienced, but there's extreme pushback. And the amount of energy that goes into having consideration for others is less, I think, these days. Everything's instant gratification. I don't even want a TV program to tell me when it's going to come on. I'm going to watch it when I want, you know, that kind of a thing. And so I think we're just, our brains are getting more geared to that. And so when you hear that someone has an issue, I think the first knee-jerk reaction is to be like, oh, the PC police, oh, trans people. And of course, gay white folks get kind of thrown into that, or become the umbrella, the overarching umbrella of everyone who's PC and leftist. You know, they must be gay and white and in power and rich and have nothing better to do than the complain. And so I feel like that's the narrative that's being put out there. And certainly those people exist. Certainly there are queer people who are very rich and have nothing better to do than complain. But
are you saying that some of the PC stuff is being driven by white people who are privileged, who are not even members of the community?
That's not what I'm saying. What I've seen is this typical reaction in relation to this special, when I hear a people online lodging their complaints and making their comments, I see an immediate reaction that certainly sums everyone up and assumes that you must be white. If you're complaining about this, you're white and gay and rich.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just here to say that that's not true.
Okay.
That maybe there are rich white gay people complaining about the special. I'm sure there are. But there are also people who are not rich complaining about the special. Mm-hmm. There are people who are not gay complaining about the special. And there are people who are not white complaining about the special.
Yes. And there are trans people who have immediately identified this as transphobic, including a couple of my friends who are trans, you know, a little bit older. They're not as, you know, that like pronouns and stuff is a lot of younger people are into it, and that's not their main focus, but even they have said that it appears that Dave doesn't like trans people. You know, and that's trans people, not me, judging what they believe to be his intent was. I mean, they're trans people who watched it, and these are not trans people who are very precious. But there are
a couple,
there are other trans people like Flame Monroe who have defended it.
Right, there are. And listen, on the surface, looking, if you're not really stopping in to really read, you know, if you're one of the two people, not you, but if the type of person is, you know, like most of us these days, where we don't really engage, everything's touch and go. We just walk. We're the type of person that walks through the museum and we don't stop to read the inscription under the picture or the description under the picture. Then it's really easy to get all of these things confused. Who's gay? Who's not? Who's white? Who's not? Oh, they're all this. They're all that. These people are complaining. But at the end, but honestly, at the end of the day, like you said, intention, I do think impact also matters. You know, your intention, we all know the old adage, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And so, you know, just to have good intentions isn't quite enough. Sticking, that means I'm going to put out what I put out and I meant it and I don't really care what it does to you. That's intention. But impact is I'm going to put something out and let me see where it lands. Mm-hmm. Let me see the effect that what I put out has. Let me watch. Let me wait and see what the response is, which requires me just observing and listening. Mm-hmm. And when you stop and wait and observe and listen, because I'm sure we can at least, he's most of the time in the special is spent talking about trans individuals. And so it's fair to understand that trans individuals' ears will perk up. He's talking about trans individuals and the trans community. Mm-hmm. That's what it has to do with. So those people are likely going to respond and have something to say, a feeling about it. And if that's true, then if everybody feels like they know his intention, oh, it's just jokes, he didn't mean it. Instead of writing off the reaction, let's look and see where it lands. Let's really look and see, okay, how does this joke travel? When he says this, and how is it being received and what does it do to these people? What is the reaction? How is, you know, and I think that's the type of empathy that's needed when analyzing something like this. His comedy is really intelligent. It's well thought out. It's layered. It's a routine. And so there's a lot of thought that goes into putting these types of jokes together.
It's Dave Chappelle. He wants you to open for his next special. I'm just kidding.
I'll do it. Yeah, right. But when you have the problem, I don't really have a problem with Dave Chappelle as a comic. I feel like he can do whatever he wants. For me, it's less about that. What I will say about the comedy special is that I don't think that I do believe that if he were really friends with more than one trans person and had the opportunity to run this material by them and cared what they thought about it, then his jokes might come out a little bit different. They may have been processed a little bit different. I can tell a joke about my friend if they're, let's say they're really, really tall or really, really short. I can tell a joke about my short friend that's just, I can tell a joke about short people and just make it about the fact that they're short, or I can tell a joke about my friend who's short and work that in a really intelligent way. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's still a joke about short people, but if they're in on the joke, then it comes across a little differently. And I just don't think that this was worked in that way. And I think that's part of the issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a great point about there's intent and then there's impact. I mean, I don't know what you would recommend, you know, should he workshop the piece? I mean, because he'd win it, you know, he recorded it live and, you know, I don't know what that means. But I also want to give an example because, you know, my career is nowhere near Dave Chappelle's fucking butler's career, but I am regularly canceled and often accused of being transphobic, which there's so many trans people in my lives, and I don't want to sound like, oh, well, I have trans friends, like people say I have black friends. But, I mean, I do look to them to understand stuff and to see, you know, what is offensive and what isn't. You know, one time Cody Ravioli told me honey, I'm a, in between cigarette drinks, I'm a fag with tits. You know, another time she told me a few, several years later that you know, that something I had said was insensitive. So when you do work on the edge, which I do, which Bianca does, which Dave Chappelle does, you are going to make mistakes, and sometimes that impact is going to be wrong. And now that everyone has, you know, cell phones, that is going to be magnified. Let me give you an example. I worked with Gottmik for the first time on a tour for 1 month this summer, and I made a joke that some people took a clip of the video and were forwarding around as proof that I am transphobic. And that they were saying things like, this makes me sick to my stomach. Now, because I had never worked with Gottmik, I told my recording engineer, I may have to take this joke out. Because if I'm not going to tour with someone and make them uncomfortable for 1 month, I'm not going to do that. I, you know, so in the meantime, Gottmik comes after and thanks me and says, thank you for having the balls for reading me because I'm trans. No one on that roast on Drag Race did it. No one ever has the balls to do it. So it made me think, well, some trans people don't mind trans jokes, and maybe they're not all taboo. And then the other thing is, if the person who is the butt of my quote transphobic humor is thanking me for it, who are these people that are anonymous online defending? Something that they learned in their gender studies class? Because no, I live my life with trans people.
True. I think we have to talk about what are the opportunities that exist for trans people. When Cody Ravioli described herself as what you say, a fag with tits, what other choices did she have to describe herself back then, when in those years earlier? What I honestly, to be very, very frank with you, Bunny, before I started doing drag, I knew I was trans. I feel the exact same today as I felt 20 years ago in terms of who I am and all that, how I see myself fitting into the world. But there really weren't a lot of opportunities for me. And so the only two options I had were drag and prostitution. That was it. I didn't think I'd be on TV. I didn't think I'd be able to work during the day. I didn't think I could go to a bank or any of the things that I'm able to do today. And so it really is about those possibilities. And what we see is, unfortunately, a lot of the stereotypes, and I want people to be really clear in understanding this. I mean, there is scientific studies that go into, it's what we call an algorithm. There is scientific proof that billions of companies put their money behind that shows that there is a connection between what people see on media and what they do in real life, how they behave in real life. There is a connection. That is the truth. And so if that's true, what types of content are we showing on media overall? What's the overwhelming message? And it's one thing to say, you know, there's jokes about all different types of people who identities and communities. But the question is, how many times do you hear, like in your, not to you, but just in general, one should ask themselves, how many times do I hear people who are, for instance, trans being referenced? And if 9 times out of 10, what are those types of things? Is it us laughing at them because they are? Is it us joking about the body parts that they have because they're insufficient? Is it joking about they look like one thing, but we all think they're another? Like, what's the overall messaging that we, if most of your content is one way, or most of your thoughts about those things, if you can sum up what you usually hear in the world and what you see about these people, there's a good chance that that's what other people are experiencing too, which means most of us are just hearing negative things about trans people. And that doesn't necessarily make someone want to go out and provide opportunities or help or services to people in those communities. And right now, the fact is that many people, not all, but many people in those communities are still struggling to get the basic things that they need and want. To be honest with you, Gottmik probably, I don't know if Gottmik has had the same, you know, I certainly know people, I've met trans women, and I'm sure you have too, who work as sex workers, Some of them love it, maybe, and they just describe loving it, whatever. But some of them say, I've had conversations with some who say, this is not what I imagine my life being, and I don't like this, but this is what I have. Mm-hmm. These are my only options. Got to get used to it. They never saw themselves going on TV. They never saw themselves taking pictures of Paris Hilton, as Gottmik does. I'm not, and that's not a thing, but that's just a very different life, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's really difficult to, when you say, can I make transphobic, trans jokes, which is very general. Trans jokes is general. That could be about surgeries. That could be about your friend. That could be about how they all suck. That could be about how they're all great. What kind of trans jokes are we talking about? And then when we take that and compare it to the individual who's saying, it's okay. Like, you know, and I'm not making correlation between the two, but if you're making, you know, for instance, Caitlyn Jenner has her receptors for the types of jokes that she will allow and the types of jokes that she would probably laugh at are very different than the types of jokes that I would laugh at or want to be around or any of those things. And so, you know, I just think when we're talking about, has this community had their break yet? Not just has one of them made it on Drag Race and one of them was on the cover of Time magazine and that's it. Because mm-hmm. that's tokenizing, right? Is it still really, really difficult for, are there still laws that exclude trans people from most of the things in public that average people are able to enjoy? And if that's true, then how is that happening today? And we look at the politicians and the people that are putting forth these policies. A lot of times these policies, the people that are arguing, and because a human has to go up and argue to have these policies put in place. A lot of these policies that are put in place, they use a lot of the same jokes and terminology that people like Dave Chappelle use to lock that law into place. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And that's the problem.
There's also a popular notion of what comedy should be today, and that is that it should include no punching down. As you suggest, mm-hmm. trans do not have a lot of the rights. Trans, you know, are still, you know, struggling for recognition. Now, Flame Monroe's point, when she was interviewed about the Dave Chappelle special, was, what are you talking about? They're nominated as Emmys. They're, you know, going to work. They're doing all this. But this is a problem that I have with this idea that's genuinely accepted about punching down in any way. So where did that come from? I mean, I don't have to agree with someone's comedy I don't need to say shut down something that I don't like. If I think that Dave Chappelle, is transphobic, I don't have to watch it. But my question is, the assertion is that this leads to violence against trans people when you make jokes. Now, I did a show for 3 years, and I made the joke, rape is never funny unless you're getting raped by a clown. Now, I don't think that anyone went out and raped anyone because I wasn't saying, you know, because I said that in the show, you know, and this right. idea of punching down.
But that's the thing. That notion, there's a disconnect between those two things because that notion is, you know, I don't know how many clowns are raping people. I don't know. But when we're talking about trans people, oftentimes we're joking about, I can tell that, let's call it what it is. That woman is a man. Uh-huh. She looks like a man because she has man body parts and she's a man. That's the joke, is that that woman is really a man. That's a man who thinks he's a woman.
Right.
That's, at the end of the day, that's the takeaway. But the problem is, a lot of us do have experience with let's say clowns in your example, that we know that the reason why that there is a connection for the comic to make that joke that they think is funny is because everyone has experience with clowns. And most of us don't have experience where clowns are raping us, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of that connection that people could find, that the comic delivering that joke would find humor in. But the problem with the jokes about make a trans woman is really just a man is, at the end of the day, that's the truth that they believe. And it doesn't really allow space for that trans person to really have their own sort. There's less truth in that. Unfortunately, like in the Dave Chappelle special, one of the trans women that he refers to, he describes as having a neck like Joe Rogan, which means it's, you know.
Oh, I have one. I know what it means.
Right. Saying that she has a big neck. But the truth of the matter is, you know, I actually know the woman that he's talking about. She is one of the most gorgeous trans women I've ever seen. Okay. She's tiny. She's petite. She does not have man hands. She does not have large hands. She does not have an Adam's apple. And she does not have a thick neck.
Okay.
So that is based in this notion that the only way that I can get you to agree and laugh about that story as Dave Chappelle is to give the connotation that she's a man who ridiculous looking big man who thinks that they're a woman. Honey, this woman is flyer than most of the girls I've ever met in my life. She is fine. And so
let's
talk about the truth. Huh?
Could that be, you know, comic exaggeration? Because
no, it obviously, well, it's not comic exaggeration because
it's not true at all.
Because it's based, it would be comic exaggeration if everyone in the audience knew she really is beautiful. Your lens is skewed. But the comic exaggeration isn't working because when people go to pass those bathroom laws, if anybody who's ever even heard a bathroom law or seen one of the bathroom bills that mention transgender people, what is the imagery that they're using? It's a man creeping into the women's bathroom and there's a little girl in the bathroom. They film commercials that they were rolling in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Alabama. This is what they're saying, is that men are coming into these rooms. And so that's unfortunately, that's the correlation that they're drawing, which has real life consequences. I'm not saying that Dave Chappelle's special turned to law. I'm saying that if Dave Chappelle's special tells jokes that support, that the joke is, the punchline is predicated, that you need to believe that trans women are men in order to laugh at the joke, then that same thinking supports the idea that trans women are men who are predators, who are pedophiles, who are looking to trick straight men into having sex with them, and who are looking to harm young girls. Those are the four things that the people who are passing these laws constantly spread. And then the new fifth one is that trans women are men who want to beat girls in sports. And so these are the things that is being put forth. And this has real life, this has real life consequences. This is people not being able to gain access to, obviously, the bathroom, to sports teams, to losing access to healthcare. These are the reasons that they're saying that take away their healthcare because. Mm-hmm. And so it's not an exaggeration.
Take away their healthcare. Take away their healthcare, huh? Because you do not believe that they are the sex that they say they are. They're saying that they're a woman and you do not believe that. Right.
Yeah.
So the punching down thing, mm-hmm. I just want to give an example of why part of me feels like, so you know what? I don't love stand-up comedy. I do think that Dave is more intelligent in the way that he's in the past used racial stereotypes. And I believe that's why he walked away from his initial TV show, because he was creating these like racial stereotypes of black guys on crack and people weren't realizing that he was doing it on different levels. And, you know, this, the notion
that piece right there, I think that piece right there is what we should look at. And because I think that there are people who can understand, okay, he was doing this thing, showing that he was making stereotypes about black people. He is a black person. And the people who were also helping him write those jokes are white. Obviously the people at the network were white. And he felt some type of way about having these stereotypes be what all he was putting out there and making money off of that. And people kind of, it sort of being self-perpetuating. And people can understand that, how that could be a problem and why that makes sense that he would walk away from it. And why we shouldn't just laugh at jokes about black people being crackheads. And so people can understand that, because we know that all black people are not crackheads, but we still can see that there's a problem with that joke. then we can understand how it might be problematic, because certainly there are people who do make that assumption, who do take that, for some reason, take that away as that's their takeaway, is Black people are all crackheads. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's an important piece, but I don't want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
But do you really think, oh, interrupt me anytime. Do you really think that now that people think Black people are crackheads? I mean, how could you not know you know so many Black people. And I mean, I can't believe anyone that would really think that. They may want to giggle about that.
I do think that there are stereotypes that are pervasive, that do seep their way in a very insidious and hidden and ugly way into unexpected parts of jobs, work, life, applying for different things and society. I do think, yes, I do think that those sort of stereotypes and misconceptions, rumors, whatever, work their way in the most surprising and ugly ways into society and the opinion that is formed about, you know, I still don't understand why, let me ask you this, why is it that most people think that welfare is mostly Black people? Mm-hmm. And food stamps are mostly Black people, even though it's not, and it never has been. But to this day, the poster person for somebody on food stamps and welfare is a Black person, mm-hmm. because that's public opinion, right. Even though it is very different from fact. The jokes that have been made about food stamps, how many of them do you think are about white people? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but most of the ones that I've heard have been about Black people being welfare queens.
Mm, yes.
So I do believe there's a connection between those types of jokes and the notion that people think, oh, well, the only people on welfare are Black.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, there's a...
And then...
But you have to joke about what people's perception is, even if it's true,
right.
or not.
That's
I did a Christmas show where I sang We Three Kings a few years ago, and I did We Three Spies of Soviet R, Kushner, mm-hmm. Flynn, and Paul Manafort, you know, to make Trump America's czar. And I
right.
don't believe that Russia was as big as a thing as everyone else, but that was everyone's perception. So I had to base mm-hmm. that little snippet in a parody medley. But I think we're putting I hear what you're saying about, you know, driving stereotypes home. Sometimes maybe you give a good example about the white people also being on food stamps, but this thing has been popping up in my mind. When I went to the Castro Theater in San Francisco and they screened Mommy Dearest, and the entire Christina Crawford was there selling books, and
oh,
this movie was based on, you know, Faye Dunaway playing her mother, and there was a whole audience of gay men who just shrieked with mirth every time her mother raised her hand with a wire hanger. You know, this is part of drag queens' accents, lip synca, and, you know, even before that, but they're all laughing at child abuse. Well, that's rough.
Yeah.
That is rough. And I was sitting in the dressing room, you know, with Christina Crawford, and I asked her, like, you know, and I just had, she said, yeah, well, it is rough. And I had to say, well, I guess she wants to sell, you know, books, but some humor is rough, and edgy humor is rough. And unlike Kathy Griffin, who says, you know, Clay Aiken is gay, you know, I'm a D-list, you know, just like silly stuff like that, Dave Chappelle is a master who can undo and look behind certain things in a way that doesn't exactly make me laugh, but I watched something that he did on Jussie Smollett in his last special on YouTube. Now, he handled this in a really great way because he said, did you hear about the French actor Jussie Smollett? Every time he said that, he got a laugh because You know, he was making fun of the bullshit that Jussie got himself into by saying that he was attacked by two MAGA people, when in fact he was attacked by two people that he knew who were Black and African and who, you know, had some ties to him as a drug dealer. So Dave has the same right that I have to be mad about that, because Jussie lied and sold out the gay community with a boy who cried wolf story so that they won't believe the real attacks that were under. And he also sold out the Black community by making this up. And there are people in this PC community that is, you know, often behind the trans community, right, like Out Magazine's Mikkel Street, who's like, I think the editor, he wrote a piece after Jussie's thing was discovered to be a lie, saying that he still supports Jussie. So there's this idea that you can't touch certain things, you know, that are expressed in the media, especially the liberal media. And I think, you know, I remember John Waters saying, wait, when Caitlyn Jenner was being, you know, pushed on us because of this TV show, that she was a trans or LGBT icon. I never said she was an icon, and everyone jumped down my throat about that. And now here she was just running for governor of California with changing her, saying that trans teens shouldn't compete in sports, and changing her story on it three times. So there, one thing that Dave said that resonated with me and would resonate with a lot of people my age, I would venture to say most, is that he respects the Stonewall activists, he used the N-word, Stonewall N-words, who were fighting for basic right. He doesn't care much about these pronoun people who were fighting over pronouns, because he doesn't think that they're fighting for something that is a big deal. You and I have talked about the pronoun stuff, and I know it's different for people who are not my age, who are younger. But yes, that does, there is an element of shrewdness that he brought to the table. One of the, you know, so, I mean, that you do work in the best comedy has an element of truth, even though you could say it is racially tinged or racist. I've seen many Asian people laugh when Bianca asked them on stage, Bianca Del Rio asked them, what is your real name? No, your your name from your country, and does it look like a JetBlue confirmation code? And everyone laughs. Now, I don't think she's saying, ha ha, you're Asian, ha ha, you have a funny name, but I don't think it's mean. I think it's like, it seems to put a lot of Asian people in her show at ease.
I think that may be true, but I mean, you know, many of the examples that you gave were laughing, making jokes about and laughing about people's actions, things that individuals have done. And then you can, you know, laugh at those choices, the decisions and the actions that they've made. Unfortunately, when you invoke, and I'm not saying that was, you know, Bianca Del Rio saying a joke about Asian people's names is what percentage of her show?
Yeah,
versus if her show was 40 to 70%, like most, more than half of her show was jokes that you only relied on a misconception about Asian people, then it might have a different impact on those Asian people that are in that room.
True. That's absolutely true.
You said that the jokes are often based in truth. Well, this is the problem, is that most of those jokes that Dave Chappelle told are truly based in the truth that these people think that they believe about trans women, like trans women are all men, mm-hmm, right? That's not really true, though. And furthermore, that's just their perception. But furthermore, when he did try to deliver some intelligence to these people and inform them about, let's say, J.K. Rowling and the TERF individuals, trans exclusionary radical feminists, the only thing he said about TERFs that was accurate was that they the name is an acronym, Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminist. He did say they hate trans people. And then he said, no, they don't hate trans people. And then he said, they just believe that gender is real. And that's not true. The truth is that they believe that trans women are men who've mutilated their bodies, that trans women are not women, that they are men. Mm-hmm. And that's what J.K. Rowling supports. And so if Dave Chappelle is going to say, I believe trans women are women, but I'm team TERF, those two things don't go together. The only way that joke works is if you actually believe that TERFs really like trans people and just want things to be fair. But that's not really the truth.
Right.
TERFs are lobbyists, and they go in and spend money and help aid governors and governments and legislators, and mostly in England, because this is mostly a UK phenomenon, but it's thanks to Dave Chappelle, it's catching on here. People are self-identifying as TERFs, and they're lobbying on making sure that trans youth, trans people don't have access to healthcare. That's their big thing in the UK right now. Mm-hmm. So those two things don't really go together. Why doesn't he say that? Why doesn't he say what a TERF really is doing? Or why does he even have to invoke, I'm not saying that he can talk about anything he wants, but that joke it's not really successful if you know about it. There are lots of things that I laughed about, and I said this in the thing with Bob. There are so many things that I used to find funny that I never understood, mm-hmm. right? When you're a child, you find a lot more things funny than you do, or certainly different things funny than when you do when you have some experience. The older you get and the more experience, then the more intelligent, and you realize, oh, maybe that wasn't funny. Certainly we all have moments where we've laughed at things or people or places or things that were just generally that we thought were funny when we realize, oh, actually, maybe I should take another look at that. And I just think that trans jokes as a subject is one of those things that maybe we should take another look at, yeah. because there are different nuances to it. Yes, transgender people are funny. There are actually comics who make intelligent jokes about transgender people that everyone can laugh at and that do make sense whether you know trans people or not. But the types of jokes that Dave Chappelle was relying on for, again, most of his special, if he had said, this show is about LGBTQ people, I'd believe it, because it was. He could have legitimately named the show LGBTQ special. And it can be categorized under jokes about LGBTQ people, because most of the jokes were about the LGBTQ community. And so, if that's your angle, if that's your platform, then let's tell a little bit of the truth. Because if you're going to sit up there and talk about the trans community for most of your special, it would be great if you actually had more experience than just two individuals, especially since most of those jokes were the types of jokes that, again, relied on or supported the information that says that trans women are men.
A podcast network.